From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul, Mission Control, Deckett. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Before we begin today's episode, we want to include a very important disclaimer, or call it a trigger warning, call it what you will. It's important for us to say at the offset of today's episode that this show will contain descriptions of graphic child abuse, very dark and true things.
And psychological horror, really.
And if this is something that personally you feel that you should not be listening to, then now is the time. Just wait for our next episode to come out.
Use our old adage, turn back now.
Yes, exactly, man, exactly.
Because you can.
Yes.
That's part of the adage as well.
Yes, that's true. That's exactly true. This topic existed on our show first as a video series back when we were doing YouTube.
Roughly 4 years ago?
Yeah.
A little over 4 years ago?
And longtime listeners, you know that we have covered many things on the audio podcast that we never made videos of, and we have also covered many things on video that we've never made an audio podcast. Lest you think that this is just a rehash of the video, we would like to let you know that this episode is much more in depth, and it includes some pertinent updates. Our story begins in a small town with a population of a little over 10,000 people called Kurum in the Czech Republic in May of 2007.
Yes, and in this small town, there was a new father named Edward T., Mr. Edward T., and he did something simple that almost every new parent has done, or many new parents have done. He installed a CCTV camera baby monitor so we could watch the new baby.
In the nursery room or nursery area of their house.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a malfunction, Matt. Instead of seeing his own wee little tyke in the camera feed, he picked up a different signal. And in this signal, he saw two young boys covered in filth, chained or tied up and restrained, locked in a cellar and being tortured by two women. One of the boys was naked on the floor, his hands restrained behind his back, and he was being forced, as Mr. Edward T. watched, he was being forced to eat food from the floor like a dog.
Yeah, and you can find video stills like Ben found, and we would not recommend looking at them. But if you need to understand it, you can find them.
And if you so choose, they're not – there's nothing that would be problematic as far as like having on your computer or something like that.
Yeah,
they're just kind of
right.
Like vignettes. They're sort of like the side of a face, and there's nothing graphic, overtly graphic about them, but they are chilling.
Yeah, you can
they
see –
they are chilling.
You can see the force feeding and the – yeah.
And that's – I mean, that's a really good point, Noel. I'm glad you brought that up. Because I'm sure several of us listening were thinking, wait, is this something that shouldn't be on my computer?
There's like three or four of them.
Oh, yeah.
And they, you know, they immediately make you feel repelled and
yeah.
disgusted, but they're not inherently graphic.
Right. And so we can only imagine what is going through Edward's mind as he watches this.
Yeah.
Is this some odd malfunction? Is this some hallucination? What he quickly realized, most likely based on the details of the cellar that he could see in the background, was that this house seemed fairly similar to his own, and he deduced that this was indeed a camera feed from a similar baby monitor in his neighbor's house. Naturally, not being a monster himself, Edward called the police. And here's where it gets crazy, very quickly.
Yeah, very, very quickly. So the police proceed to the neighbor's home, which is occupied by Clara and Katerina Marova. They're two sisters who are living at this house where they believe the feed has been coming from. And the two boys that were on the camera that were seen were Andrzej and Jacob. These are Clara's sons. So Clara's sons, Andrzej and Jacob. But those weren't the only people they found at the house.
That's right. That's right. Police found two adults and three children. The third child was an adopted daughter, the adopted daughter of Clara Marova, a 13-year-old named Anika, or Anna, it's alternately called both. She ran into the arms of the police sobbing about the terrible and horrific abuse that she had endured. She directed the police to the boys in the cellar. They had serious, grievous wounds. One of the boys died in the hospital, and evidence indicated that the adults had been slowly skinning him and either eating parts of him or forcing him to eat parts of himself. Let's pause there. Let's rewind 2 years. How did we get to this situation? Because up until 2005, Clara Marova was a single mother of two, and her two sons, Andrzej and Jacob, or as we talked about off air, perhaps pronounced Jakub.
Mm-hmm. J-A-K-U-B.
Mm-hmm. And Andrzej, O-N-D-R-E-J. These two kids lived pretty good lives. You know, they went to summer camp. They had a knack for language. They loved to play outdoors. But things began to change when Clara's sister, Katerina, visited the house, and she brought along this 13-year-old orphan, sometimes called Anna, sometimes called Anika. And Anika—
At the time, she would have been 11.
At the time, she would have been 11. That's right. Anika had a terrible, terrible story. She had escaped an abusive, possibly a child trafficking ring in Norway. And now, as a result of this escape, she is under the protection of a secret organization. And Clara, being a very good-hearted person, at first, almost instantly becomes a nurturing maternal figure to Anna.
And apparently, Anna is suffering from various diseases. She has leukemia. Her kidneys are failing. She's going blind and deaf. And she's spending a significant amount of time in the hospital because of all of these things that are going wrong with her.
And it's important to note that it's always Clara's sister, Katerina, who takes Anna to the hospital. Clara is never allowed to accompany her, but she is in contact with Anna's doctor. She starts receiving instructions via text message and email from this mysterious doctor, who is, as far as Clara knows, the only person who knows how to fully treat Anna or Anika for both her psychological and her physical trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And these treatments get very weird very quickly. One of the treatments that Clara Marova later mentions in court was that the doctor instructed her to rub Anna's body, especially her crotch part, for several hours. And then this would improve her quality of life. Keep in mind, again, this is, as far as Clara knows at this time, this is an 11-year-old.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Shaking my head.
It's dark stuff. Clara never meets the doctor at all, except one time.
Yeah. In the car, in the dark. So she couldn't actually see this person's face at all. But this is still a doctor. So the trust in some way in the institution that he represents, it's still there for her.
And he also was a diplomat.
Yeah.
He showed Clara a diplomatic passport, and he also passed along what he said were Anna's medical files. And later, Clara said, "I know it sounds naive, but the fact that he was a diplomat and a doctor was a guarantee of authority for me, and so I trusted him."
Oof. Okay, so when Anna was at home, she would describe these horrifying stories about sexual abuse that she experienced while she was in Norway. And during the days when she's hospitalized, when she's constantly there, Clara was supposed to talk to her on the phone several times a day, and this person, this doctor, would mediate Clara's messages to Anna so she can hear mommy while unconscious. So she would be at the hospital and stay unconscious for periods of time, at least according to what Clara knew.
Yeah, and by 2006, Clara paid less and less and less attention to her own children, and her sons spent more time at their grandparents' house than they did at home. And Clara was still trying to help Annika recover from her traumatic experiences in Norway, and ultimately decided that she wanted to adopt her.
But the doctor said there would be huge problems with this. Mm-hmm. He told Clara that an adoption would not be possible. The authorities would never approve it because her sons were being abusive toward Annika. So the doctor told Clara she needed to cure the boys, to remove the evil spirits inhabiting them by instituting a regimen of therapy. And he said the appropriate therapy was hard discipline and physical punishment. Clara began beating the boys repeatedly, often for very minor perceived infractions. She would use her bare hands, a belt, or a wooden kitchen spoon. She would also lock them in the closet or bathroom for punishment, for a kind of timeout situation, where often they were forced to stay there overnight. Eventually, the doctor decided that this therapy was inadequate, and we'll return after a word from our sponsors.
So when we left, we heard that the doctor decided that this physical punishment that was being enacted on these boys was not enough, and Clara is told then by the doctor to stop behaving as their mother. And she's ordered to take the boys and move to this other town. It's a small town in a different district, okay? So the doctor then advises a stronger type of therapy, not just the physical stuff, at least the kind that he had prescribed before. And in this place, in this new house, Clara meets with Jan Skurla, a different person, and Jan Turek, both spelled J-A-N. And they also meet with Hanna Basova. And, of course, Katarina also joins them.
The sister. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and so this escalation, I guess, that was recommended involved the following. And this is big-time trigger warning territory, yep. I would say. So the boys were kept in dogs' cages, and they were not allowed to communicate with each other at all, nor to have any of the comforts of being physically held by their mother. Clara helped simulate drowning them in a bucket, waterboarding essentially, while Katarina held their hands.
Yeah. In addition, they were burned with cigarettes, scratched with forks and cutlery, hogtied for long periods of time, forced to recite, quote, vulgar sentences. We don't know what those are, but they were also made to beat one another. And Jacob was, on at least one instance, forced to pretend he was dead and lay in a hole that had been dug in the grounds of the compound.
So the Jans were connected with the doctor? They were his, like, acolytes in some way?
Yeah, Jan and the Jans and Hanna, as well as Katarina, were members of something.
Yeah. Right?
And that something still remains mysterious today, but They were affiliated. They weren't just random people. And there's pretty compelling evidence that Clara actually knew or had been familiar with at least Jan Turek and Hanna Basova before on some level.
Have you seen the French film Martyrs, either one of you?
I believe I have.
It's a very extreme, like, horror kind of thing, but it involves a cult situation that's very similar to this, where it's all about breaking people down to find who they truly are, to, like, expose their ideal selves by torturing them or whatever.
Right. To get them closer to God.
Closer to
right?
God, yeah. I mean, this seems like the ideology that's at play here. It's very twisted and sick, but it reminds me of that. I'm wondering if that movie was inspired by this case at all.
And that movie, while a very punishing movie, is actually very well done.
No, it is, for sure. Yeah. There was an American remake that wasn't good, but the French one is quite good.
And if I'm remembering the correct one, that ending, that stays with you. So probably the most extreme escalation of violence here occurs when Jan Skirla and Jan Turek cover the children's heads with bags, tie them up, burn them with more cigarettes, and then they focus a lot of their abuse on Ondrej. They rip off a piece of tissue from his buttocks and they burn the wound. According to some sources, he was forced to eat it. And to prevent the screaming and yelling from this torture, the group regularly taped the children's mouth shut. While all of this is happening, by September of 2006, Clara begins the adoption process with Annika. And she does so with the doctor's approval, the mysterious doctor from the text messages again. But surprise, surprise, more shady stuff occurs. First, in the Czech Republic, when you are adopting a child, the court requires a DNA test of the child. The doctor said this could not happen, full stop, because, according to the doctor, it might reveal Anna or Anika's leukemia, which for some reason he didn't want to have happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Clara was told that that would make the child unadoptable.
Oh.
The child.
Yeah.
So to make things even more complicated, when Anna or Anika is supposed to go to court for this adoption hearing, do you want this person to mm-hmm. be your adopted mom, et cetera, you're not being forced to do this, all the basic questions one would ask, Clara's sister, Katerina, instead contacts a local actor named Victor Scala, and Victor Scala's daughter impersonates Anna or Anika in front of the court. And at this time, neither the daughter of Victor Scala, neither her name nor her picture have ever been published. Somehow, this whole con job worked. The court approved the adoption. And at that point, the doctor has Clara, Ondrej, Jacob, or Jakob, and Annika move into a new house in that town in Kurum. Annika has a normal room. From descriptions, it had quite a few toys, and it was painted a happy yellow color. Mm-hmm. The boys are tied up, and the abuse continues in a cellar. And this is when Edward T., who I have been trying very hard not to call Mr. T. Mm-hmm. over the course of this episode, discovers the abuse.
So let's just let all that sink in for a second. Okay, we're back up to the point again where it's been discovered. Let's talk about the sisters, Katerina and Clara, and what is going on with them, because none of this makes sense. Let's start somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. So these sisters both were apparently exhibiting some signs of mental disorders, and they believed that they had received some kind of spiritual visions, something that is giving them higher than regular instructions, basically.
Like martyrs.
Yeah. But they did say that they had been duped.
Mm-hmm. They did. So they said that there, when the police were discovered this event and when it eventually went to trial, they said that the kids were beaten, sexually abused, shocked, and more because the adopted daughter, Anika, was the mastermind behind it. Anika,
yeah, this 13-year-old girl.
Right. Anika and the mysterious text message, email-only doctor, they said, had brainwashed them. Police were not sure how to proceed. The three children were being held at a foster home kind of situation. But then Anna or Anika escaped. And as it turns out, Anna or Anika, whatever name you want to call this person, was not a child at all. You see, her real name was Babora Skirlova, and she was 33 years old.
Wow.
That's a twist.
Yeah. It really is. And if you look at pictures of her, you can find pictures of her online from various stages in her life, some family photos from early on when she was with the new family, as well as later photos of her. Mm-hmm. And she definitely almost passes as a 13-year-old girl.
And we're talking Christian Bale levels of physical fluidity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Changing of appearance. So according to Clara Morova, Babora had incited this torture gradually, convincing the mom and her sister that she was being victimized by these boys, that they were being unfair, that they needed discipline. And she said, you know, my doctor saved my life. This is the only person who can advise them. And as the investigation unfolded, police realized they were dealing with more than an isolated case. They realized there were multiple people involved.
So the so-called friends of Annika's who were a party to this torture, such as the Jans, Jan Turek, and Jan Skria, who, by the way, turned out to be Barbora Skorlova's brother, Jan Skria, that is, also had known each other previously. And law enforcement began to really get the picture that there was more at play here than met the eye, and that they may actually be on the hunt for some kind of cult.
And we'll get to that right after a word from our sponsor.
We've returned. I guess this segment of the episode could be called, if we were going to use gallows humor, Where in the World is Barbora Skirlova? First, she goes to Denmark. But the heat is catching on to her, so she flees Denmark.
And this is right after...
This is right after she escapes the foster home.
Exactly.
Yeah. And she was eventually found later in Norway, in Oslo, where she had purportedly originally come from, right? Mm-hmm. When she visited this house. She was living with other members of this organization or cult, and she was living as a 13-year-old boy named Adam. You can see pictures. She shaved her head.
Yep.
She went to school for 3 or 4 months. The only class she didn't go to was PE, and her teachers didn't want to push it on her. Apparently, she did such a good job that even later, people who taught her would still refer to her as Adam. Police believe that Barbora's father, a man named Joseph or Josef Skirla, may be the mastermind behind the torture. He was suspected by several sources to be the doctor behind those text messages.
But it is not confirmed.
But it is not confirmed, yeah. So let's look a little bit more into the character of Josef Skirla.
So this guy is believed to be the head of a group called the Ants, A-N-T-S. And these this group allegedly began as just a hiking collective, and then it ended up later evolving into some offshoot of this strange, enigmatic, controversial thing called the Grail Movement.
Yeah, if we want to pause just for a second there to explain what the Grail Movement is.
Sure.
It started in Germany in the late 1940s, and it was it follows the teachings of a guy named Oscar Ernst Bernhardt, who is also known by his pen name, Abdurushin. He was a self-proclaimed messiah, and he did not establish this organization himself. The movement was organized by people who followed them. They primarily wanted to disseminate and spread the work of a book he wrote, In the Light of the Truth, the Grail Message. They're all around the world. They live in different areas, 16 countries across Europe. They're also in 22 African countries. Worldwide, they're somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 mm-hmm. members, but they, for their part, were largely considered maybe a little out there, a little off the beaten path, but not harmful. You know what I mean? Certainly not as harmful as organizations such as, say, the Catholic Church.
Oh, shots fired, and other things. But yeah, it's one of those kind of, I don't know, just a little more eccentric new version of religions that, you know, ends up being called a cult because that's how we describe cults.
Right, right. So from what we understand about this story, this group, the Ants, was part of a larger organization similar to a scouting group in the U.S., like Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts. Mm-hmm. Or I think, didn't Boy Scouts change their name now? They're just scouting?
I think you're right.
Right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think now they will admit female children as well.
Wonderful.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the Girl Scouts are still around.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tell us what you think about it.
Too much money in those cookies, man.
That's true. That's true. Anybody who ever had to be in the Boy Scouts, you'll understand, you'll understand exactly what I'm saying when I say that, man, peddling popcorn just did not compare.
Well, those cookies just sell themselves.
Yeah. It's true. It's
popcorn, true. You got to have a really slick line.
Yeah, popcorn, you've got to work the angles.
Yeah, for sure.
Sell popcorn. But this organization, this kind of scouting organization, they met up regularly. They would go hiking, camping maybe twice a month or so. In Boy Scouts, groups of kids will be organized into smaller groups called troops. And troops are often going to be named after animals, like just almost any animal you can imagine.
Rabbit troop.
Yeah, that's great. The rabbits.
The
yeah.
Weeblows. That was one of mine.
You had a troop of Boy Scouts called the Weeblows?
Yeah.
Wasn't that just like the mini Boy Scouts?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
like
the— I know. That's what I was saying.
Junior Scouts.
Yeah, I know. It was awesome.
Just for
that's
a
even
sake.
Below Cub, right?
I can't remember.
The is hierarchy,
it,
huh?
Is it Cub Scout, Weeblow, Boy Scout?
I think that's
maybe.
Correct.
Maybe. Okay,
I think that's
got
correct.
It, got it, got it.
But,
an eagle.
Right.
The coveted eagle.
Like Dr. Buzz Rendezvous.
Isn't there also Life?
Yeah. Life Scout? That's
yeah, the there's Life one. After. Eagle is the top one, and then you get Life before that.
Oh, wow. Oh, gotcha. Okay, gotcha.
I think. And then after that, there are all things like Order of the Arrow, and then do you want to be a Scoutmaster? And
that's yeah. cool.
It's interesting. You know, our one of our coworkers and producers, Ramsey Yunt, is an Eagle Scout.
Yeah, and you're not.
I am.
I was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to.
In another life. In another life. I paid my dues in the woods. I came out way more cryptic than I meant. I meant that I had to go get orienteering merit badges and stuff.
That's fair.
Wow. So this group, the Ants, was just kind of like one of those.
Yeah.
Not the same, but kind of like it. They were just called the Ants.
Yeah, like the rabbits, to Noel's example. So even now, we don't know very much about the internal escalation that led this group, that led Joseph Scarla and his followers to go from being a hiking enthusiast group to possibly an offshoot of this other new spiritual movement. But we do know that psychological experts studied Barbora Skirlova extensively while she was in custody and while she's under supervision. And this, again, is going to be a situation where we do want to give a warning about the graphic nature of their findings. So in their investigation, the way that the trial went is that the trial didn't really focus on the mysterious doctor because they couldn't find that person, mm-hmm. they couldn't prove who it was. So instead, they looked at Clara and Katerina as the instigators along with Barbora or Anika. And according to the psychologists, Barbora was the main initiator and manipulator of the situation. She initiated the abuse by getting the grown-ups, quote-unquote grown-ups, because let's not forget she was in her 30s, to abuse these children. And when she was arrested in Oslo, Norway, living as a 13-year-old kid named Adam, police also found her diary. And in her diary, she allegedly described all the details about her various identities, including how she prepared herself, and experts said that beyond a shadow of a doubt, this woman does not have schizophrenia or a similar disease. She knows what she's doing is wrong. She can differentiate between good and evil, and she's wearing multiple identities just to manipulate people.
Yeah, it's not multiple personality disorder or anything to that effect. It's, I'm doing this to get something.
Well, and she's obviously successful at it. I mean, this the amount of effort that's going into these schemes is outrageous. Like you said, Ben, Christian Bale, method, Meisner kind of like levels of
yeah.
prep.
Well, and here's one of the craziest things. You'd think someone like this is a criminal mastermind of some sort, a
right.
genius level person.
A lector or
yeah.
something, yeah.
But her IQ levels were tested multiple times, and she consistently came back as around 99, which is not a genius. It's, I mean, it's fine. It's functioning. But it's, you know, I don't know. What, do you guys know what your IQs are, at least from the tests?
No.
I don't know what mine is either. I'm hoping I'm in the 100-something range.
You're way up there.
I honestly have no
you
idea.
You must be.
We should all take one.
I don't know. We have to go 1, 2, 3, share.
Okay, cool. All right, cool.
Also, the IQ test, as I'm sure several folks listening along with us will point out, is just cartoonishly flawed.
Well, yeah. And here's the thing, the big question, right? Mm. She kept scoring 99. Is that because she wanted to score around a 99?
Good question. Is it an affectation, right? Because what they also found was that the experts believe that this person had consciously chosen to live as a child on all levels, on, you know, like we said, like a Meisner Daniel mm-hmm. Day-Lewis level where production never wraps and the movie never ends.
Wow.
This allows her to avoid taking responsibility for her actions, and they say at the same time, it allows her to get the attention that she desperately seeks, because they said she had what's called a histrionic personality and a strong inclination to manipulative behavior. They also had sexologists study her.
I didn't realize they were called sexologists.
It may be an error of translation on my part.
I hope not. It's a very straightforward name for a profession.
Yeah.
Very clearly.
It's a legit thing. Sexology is scientific study,
right? Of course. So the people in this profession proved that she definitely has sadomasochistic predispositions, which I could see that as being very clear from her actions, and with lesbian and pedophilic orientation. Also pretty clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In other words, this kind of tells us that she is excited by the exploitation and torture of children. She is sexually stimulated by that. That's the horror that we were talking about at the top of the show.
That's what they call a bad combo.
Yeah, a monster made flesh.
Oof. You know? Oof.
This is the kind of thing that you would maybe hear associated with very monstrous serial killers.
Yeah.
You know, like Albert Fish or something.
Well, and it gets us into some of the most basic but controversial and difficult to discuss topics, which is the whole nature versus nurture thing of when you're born or what happens to you, what creates something like that in someone. Generally, my opinion would be that something happens to you. That person is made. That person is things happen to that person to create that kind of orientation, in my opinion. And, you know, when you think about the doctor, whoever that person was, if it was, in fact, you know, the father.
You'd think maybe for it to be that specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Such a specific hang-up, a specific fetish, I guess, for lack of a better term. Yeah.
I don't know.
A lot of serial murderers have either a history of abuse or a history of brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That triggers them. And then I guess if we're looking at maybe a mental condition like schizophrenia, you know, there have been people who have committed murders because they have a break. But this sounds so calculated on this person's part, you know?
Yeah. In the show I work on outside of this one, about the killer Keith Hunter Jesperson, he had a head injury. He also had a very manipulative, abusive father that he kind of kowtowed to when he was a child. Mm-hmm. And he also just had a predisposition to violence. And so it was kind of a combination of nature. It's sort of what the show's about, is like kind of like pinning down where that divide is. And you see that in all these cases. But I agree with you, Matt, that the more abhorrent and kind of out there that the predilections are for these people, like the more likely that part is they experienced something. Something was done to them that they carried with them. Mm-hmm. That's chilling.
And that podcast is Happy Face, available now wherever you find your favorite shows.
Thanks, Ben. We've got a couple episodes left, and we took a break off for the holidays, but it's back strong. It's going to be 12 episodes total, so check it out.
Me.
Thanks, dude.
And as these details emerge, when we first did this video, we didn't have the benefit of this expert analysis, right? We didn't find that the first time around, so the video is much shorter. But we have some additional details as well. As the different specific aspects of this case and this horrific event, a horrific series of events emerges, the Grail movement themselves deny any involvement with this sect or this group or this community or this, dare I say, this cult known as the Ants. And they also denied any involvement with other offshoot sects of the movement. Sort of like how imams in the Muslim world will deny the Nation of Islam. They'll say that's a different religion. We're Muslim. They're something else. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, and the other thing here is the quality and the amount of filming, the cameras that were set up to monitor this abuse. Mm-hmm. They were of such a level that it's thought that perhaps this was something bigger than just Barbara up there as Anika watching it for her own pleasure, or, you know, could it have been somebody else also watching it?
Was there more to the story? And that, I think, is the most frightening aspect of this, because that is largely the question upon which our story ends. Publicly, no one really knows what happened. Somehow, Yosef Skerla escaped. He was never charged with a crime. He just, like Kaiser Soze, disappeared. His whereabouts are unknown as we record this. We don't even know if he was actually the doctor, which I wanted to ask everyone, do we think it's possible that in addition to impersonating these different people, Barbara herself could have been the doctor, like with a hidden phone sending text messages or something? I don't know. Because then she did meet, Clara somebody. Did meet somebody in the car, right?
Yeah. Ooh.
So you have to wonder. We do have good news of a sort. Of all the people who were charged in this trial, Clara, Katerina, Jan Turek, Hanna Basova, Jan Skirla, and his sister Barbora Skirlova, all of them were found guilty, and they were all sentenced.
But
they have all served their sentences already, and they live free somewhere in the world. At least as far as we could find, Barbora Skilova was released from prison in 2012, and now people believe she's either been living in South Moravia or a place called Brno, B-R-N-O. The most recent reports show that she is living under a new name, no longer plays the piano. She was noted as a talented pianist. She's under the monitoring of the Probation and Mediation Service, or Medication Service. Mm-hmm. According to the psychiatrist who observed her, she has severe mental difficulties, and she often appears to switch between one or more of her previous young male personalities. Here's another thing to add to that troubling possibility, that breadcrumb of a larger ring
yeah.
of people. She has more young personalities than Anika, Anna, or Adam.
Yeah.
She exhibits multiple ones.
And is that because she's infected other families in the past?
Earlier we said that she was analyzed and there were no signs of multiple personalities, schizophrenia. So is this like calculated even more?
Mm-hmm. Or is this like a Project Monarch thing
yeah,
where
right.
something is placed upon her psyche?
Good God.
This story is the stuff of nightmares.
It really is.
And I know this sounds really messed up to say, but I would be interested to see this handled very artfully in a film.
Yeah.
Maybe it's too – I don't know. Maybe it's almost like giving short shrift to the victims to even consider making this into some kind of work of, you know, fictionalized account or whatever like that. But it's just got all the – mm-hmm. intrigue and the twists and like you could – oh, my God. Ugh.
I think there was some – I want to say when we were working on this a few years back, there was some film that maybe it borrowed aspects of the story, but I think maybe it was just they were borrowing the idea of an adult impersonating a child so successfully yeah. for so long.
It's called Orphan.
Orphan, that's what it is.
It was available like not that long ago at least, and I don't think it came out that long ago either, 2009. Yeah.
2009. Okay.
Oh, God. That's over 9 years ago.
We're old.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe we're aging like wine or the good cheese.
Like fine wine.
Like fine wine.
Or fine cheese.
Those tannins are really showing up.
So at this point, unfortunately, this story is probably not over, but this is where the path drops off. We don't know much else about what's happened. We do know that according to the psychiatric reports, while Barbora has stopped playing piano near as much, she does spend a lot of time drawing, quote, very morbid pictures. As for what happened to this group, this possible cult, whatever you want to call them, where the leader is, if the leader exists, if the so-called doctor exists, what their plans are for other children or other families, for now, it's something they don't want you to know. It's a relatively successful conspiracy.
And it's something that I'm perfectly happy to close the book on for today because, geez, Louise.
I remember the feeling in 2014 when I finished the video. Ugh. I didn't ever want to think about this ever again.
And here we are.
And here we are.
I pull you back in, Matt.
Well, we got through it.
Well, you're an intrepid traveler, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
We made it through, guys, all of us.
We can end on a completely unrelated, different note that's not near as depressing.
Okay.
Scary. Here it is. We want to thank Spencer C. Schluter, who dropped by our community page, Here's Where It Gets Crazy, and hipped us to an amazing story that I did not believe at first, even though it's in Time magazine.
It's titled, The U.S. Military Believes People Have a Sixth Sense. That's cool.
Yeah, intuition. Since 2014, the Office of Naval Research apparently has embarked on a four-year, $3.85 million research program to explore premonitions, intuition, or what we have on this show before called Spidey Sense.
That's right. And specifically, they're looking at it for – I was going to say for use or looking at it in application to apply to sailors and Marines, people who are actually in the fighting force and or people who are surveilling.
We should do an episode on this. What do you think?
Yes.
Agreed.
I sense that we may. Right? Oh, that's the worst joke. Well, thank you so much for listening, everybody. Enjoy is the wrong word, but we hope you have found this as strange as we have this story. Let us know if you have any updates on the Kurum case or the case of the ants, and let us know if you have found stories in your neck of the woods that are similar.
I know this goes without saying, but if you suspect a child, you know, a friend of one of your children perhaps is being mistreated in any way, there are resources for reporting this beyond just calling the police. I mean, there are, you know, people that can help.
Absolutely. In the U.S. and Canada, you can contact the Child Help National Child Abuse Hotline. It's staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with professional crisis counselors and interpreters that can provide assistance in over 170 languages. That hotline is 1-800-4-A-CHILD or 1-800-422-4453.
But if you feel a child is in imminent danger, you know, Call the police.
Don't hesitate. Okay. And if you want to call us, just as a little turn there.
Feels weird after that.
And just tell us something maybe a little more lighthearted. You can call us right now and leave a message. We are 1-833-STDWYTK.
Man, I got it on the tail end on that one.
Nice work. And if you don't want to do that, you don't want to find us on Twitter and Facebook and all the other places where we're mostly conspiracy stuff, sometimes conspiracy stuff show, you can write us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.